Thank you for having me. I do apologize. I am a trade lawyer, so there are legally things I need to say at the start. Everything I say here today is my own opinions, not those of my employers. But also, you know, hey, this is pretty interesting, right? You have a trade lawyer arguing for free trade, which is kind of weird, since I'm really arguing it's my interest. I think Phil brought up the wonderful example of rules of origin. He made it sound horrible and boring. That's my job, man. No, but really, lawyers, lobbyists, and others really benefit from protectionism. And I'll have more on that later. So a regime of free trade that I'm arguing for, being a Cato guy, I'm sure that's pretty obvious to you, is, I would hope, to be a bit surprising. So I'm going to start a bit on what we were told was the topic, was America pursuing an aggressive free trade agenda. I obviously, probably not unsurprisingly, support that for a litany of reasons. Start with the actual benefits of open trade and globalization for the United States over the last several decades. What we see, starting, of course, with the consumer level, is that American consumers have gained not mere cheap t-shirts, but thousands of dollars of additional wealth and buying power. And it's not just about money in pockets, it's about variety and abundance. We go to stores today and we take for granted that we can get fresh fruit in the winter or really nice roses, whatever it is. These are all the products of open trade. Americans now work less for more than at any point in history. We live in a true era of abundance. SMU, a couple years ago, did a fantastic study looking at the proliferation of basic necessities in American households. It goes straight up and has now leveled off because we all have all of those necessities. Now, certainly globalization and trade are not solely responsible for this, but they do play a big part. But it's not just about consumer gains. Companies, farmers, workers all benefit from America's integration into the global economy. Almost half of everything we import these days are industrial inputs. These are things that American manufacturers and exporters use to remain globally competitive and to produce other stuff, employing thousands and thousands and millions of American workers in the process. Exports support millions of American jobs. And as Phil mentioned, the proliferation of trade agreements, the World Trade Organization, and rest has lowered trade barriers and opened export markets. Believe it or not, the United States is the second largest global exporter in the world at $1.5 trillion per year, by far the most per capita. We're punching far above our weight. Foreign direct investment, the necessary flip side of that much maligned trade deficit. We are the number one target for foreign direct investment. Studies show that FDI not only improves wages in the companies that are into which that investment goes, but in the communities that surround them, in the competitor companies that face that FDI. The IMF did a cross-country analysis of over 150 countries looking at tariffs and other protectionist measures and found the freer trade countries had higher wages, less inequality, more output, more productivity, yada, 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 over and over and over again. Trade is not merely also about stats. It is about the unseen benefits of economic dynamism in the U.S. economy. When Americans are allowed to spend their money freely, their capital goes to more productive things. That means better jobs, better wages, better companies, and better lives. Not only that, studies show that economies that are more open are more resilient to shocks, be it from trade or technology or whatever. It makes us leaner and meaner. On the geopolitical side, trade has been a significant part of the last 75 plus years of geopolitical stability. As Phil mentioned, right before the GATT and now the World Trade Organization, we had global war was a kind of common thing. Regional trade, beggar thy neighbor, trade policies played a significant part in global war. Now, certainly conflict has not abated entirely, but it has decreased, and it certainly has decreased on the global level, in part due to economic integration. And even if you think China is the geopolitical problem of the moment, well, that argues for a more aggressive free trade position towards our allies, which of course is not happening, whether that's the EU or India or Japan or the TPP countries or the rest. Greater economic integration provides them with not only economic growth, but an alternative to the Chinese market. You would think, again, that would be good. Then there's the moral element of free trade. You know, we lose sight of the fact, particularly in the political space, that trade is not between countries, it is between individuals. It is the result of voluntary economic transactions. Protectionism, on the other hand, is the government getting in the middle of those transactions. It actually is difficult sometimes. You know, there's a new increased skepticism in the conservative and the right for trade. And, you know, conservatives rightly, I believe, as a libertarian, they howl when the government tries to get between them and their doctors, and yet they invite the government to get in between them and their merchants, their suppliers. But it's beyond that. How did that protectionism get there? Well, what we see through American history is that the protectionism that had existed was the result of smoke-filled rooms and backroom deals and lobbying. It was political actors deciding to line their pockets and their clients' pockets at the expense of the consumers, and actually disproportionately poor American consumers, forcing them to pay more for less so that those companies that are well-connected can get richer. That is just classic cronyism. There is also the unforgettable element of global poverty elimination. Globalization has brought hundreds of millions of human beings out of global poverty. It has helped with the reduction of child labor, the reduction of sweatshops, the reduction of forced sex work, all of these horrible things that we know, subsistence farming, all of these things we forget about, are becoming less and less common, in part due to global trade. And even if you don't care about these human beings outside of the United States, from a cynical point of view, these are more customers for American products. This is a more stable global economy, a more stable world. We should want that even if we are thinking of America first. Beyond that, so those are the benefits. But I want to hit on a couple myths as well, because the trade debate always devolves into these myths. First, the decline, the dissolution of American manufacturing. Well, believe it or not, the United States is still the number two manufacturing country in the world at $2 trillion of value add last year. Again, far more per capita than China. Jobs in the sector are lost mostly to technology, particularly if you go beyond a five-year window, you look back decades. The loss of manufacturing jobs is a global phenomenon happening in manufacturing countries like Japan and Germany, even happening in China today. China has shed millions of manufacturing jobs. We see over and over again that the myth of American deindustrialization more than the reality. Now, certainly, could certain sectors or certain policies be better? Yes, but as we'll see in a second, trade and protectionism is not going to help. In fact, another myth that is very common these days is trade is especially disruptive for regions, and that this is a regional and community issue. Well, actually, the IMF just released a brand new study showing that trade shocks at a regional level in terms of labor participation, wages, and inequality trade is far less disruptive than tech shocks. That the regions that are disadvantaged, that were hurt by trade shocks, actually end up better off a couple years later. Helping these regions, believe it or not, is their openness to trade, but also flexible labor market policies, state and local policies that, again, have nothing to do with national level tariff and trade policy. Another myth out there is the idea that the last few years have been some sort of libertarian free trade paradise in the United States. Well, that's also quite the myth. For example, we have hundreds and hundreds of fair trade duties, anti-dumping and countervailing duties on products, about half of them on Chinese products. We have tons of subsidies that are, of course, a non-tariff trade barrier. We have technical standards, licensing standards, Section 337 duties we have on intellectual property violations. We have a sanctions regime, so on and so on and so on. The point being, as some have some studies have shown, the United States is actually one of the more protectionist places in the world, just simply not when it comes to tariff rates. Now, the other thing that I just heard a bit of is that the idea that everybody else cheats, everybody else is a mercantilist, the United States is not. Well, as Phil helpfully mentioned, well, really, average tariff rates around the world, including places like China, have been going down as a result in part to resulting in part from our trade agreements. A great new book by NYU economist Arvind Panagiriya just showed that the countries like in Southeast Asia and elsewhere that are known for their industrial policies actually benefited far more from their free trade policies. These same countries, Korea, Singapore, and others, were engaging in liberalization at the same time they were engaging in certain industrial policies. And in fact, the sectors that were getting the industrial policy really were not as vibrant as those that were subjected to foreign competition. Finally, I want to end with the alternative to my idealistic free trade world, and that is the protectionist world. Well, I was just saying at lunch how helpful it is from an academic perspective that we're actually living through a case study in new protectionism. I wrote a paper a couple of years ago for Cato about the history of America's protectionist failures. But really, you know, in the last few years, it got kind of hard for me to find examples. Sure, there were Obama's tire tariffs and a few others, but not much. Well, now we're getting to see a real-world experiment in how protectionism hurts the U.S. economy. We see economic harms. Studies show that President Trump's tariffs have been mostly borne by American consumers in the range of about $1,000 per year. Business investment has dropped significantly. Manufacturing jobs are now starting to peter out, if not decline, certainly declining in politically important states in the Rust Belt and elsewhere. We see declining jobs in logistics and transport, all of those unseen blue-collar jobs that actually exist in large part due to trade. Beyond the intense costs, I should add, manufacturing output as well has petered out in the last few months, and it all coincidentally started right around the time we started a trade war. Huh. Getting to that, we get to failed objectives. So we were supposed to revive American manufacturing. Well, the steel industry, one of the primary beneficiaries of President Trump's tariffs, is now struggling overall. Steel stock prices have collapsed. U.S. Steel is laying off workers in the Midwest and shutting down factories. We see, again, I mentioned manufacturing output, which was booming in part due to the tax cuts and other regulatory reforms, has now again stopped. And many are saying we are in a manufacturing recession. Foreign direct investment is down. I mentioned business investment is down. American companies are complaining about uncertainty in the trade environment, which is the inevitable result of injecting political actors into a market phenomenon. And we've seen little new core manufacturing investment since all of these tariffs started. Exports are down. The trade deficit is bigger. There are no really new trade agreements. We've updated a U.S.-Korea FTA. We've modified the NAFTA. Maybe that will get passed. Meanwhile, everyone else has finished the TPP without the United States. There's the EU-Japan FTA, the EU-Mercosur deal. China is negotiating a massive regional agreement with India. Africa has just announced a rather large continental free trade agreement. Where is that here? China, right? This was all about China. Well, the China deal that has been announced so far is a phase one deal, maybe, possibly, that hasn't solved much of anything. In fact, many experts say that the tariffs have emboldened Chinese hardliners, have turned the Chinese people into a more anti-American stance, have put the U.S. economy in a weaker negotiating position. And then there's, again, this national security angle. Well, I just mentioned we don't seem to be really improving national security with respect to China due to the trade war. It has also, at the same time, alienated allies. Where is the EU in all this? Actually, we just slapped tariffs on the EU, whereas Japan and other countries that could help, they are not, because we are fighting them, too, on trade. Lastly, there is all other sorts of non-economic dysfunction. We've seen a lobbying boom in Washington, D.C. on trade and trade-related issues, in part because companies want their own tariffs, or they're trying to get away from the tariffs that have been imposed. So great time to be a trade lobbyist or a trade lawyer. In fact, when President Trump announced his big steel and aluminum tariffs, he did it in front of a room of steel and aluminum CEOs. It's not exactly the populist image you'd expect. And then I mentioned this exclusion process, which is just an absolute mess. Big companies are doing fine. They hire big lawyers. They do great. Little companies, on the other hand, are struggling mightily. Companies that need access to global inputs to produce products, who can't really afford a high-priced lawyer. You know, these are the companies that adapted when there was the China shock. These are the companies that adapted after NAFTA was passed. And now they're struggling because they did exactly what they were told to do. So, in conclusion, look, there are real problems in the United States. There are real problems with regional inequality, with community issues, the breakdown of the American family, deaths of despair, so forth and so on. But I think as the last couple years have proven, protectionism, turning away from open trade, is not going to help and is very likely going to make things worse. There are policies to be had, state and local policies that can help, but it is a free trade policy is still very much worth pursuing. Thank you. Thank you.